Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We are going to delve into technology today, new and emerging technologies, and in particular, 3D holography and the video of making holograms appear to be real. My guest is Dr. Nasser Peygambarian, who's the director of a research center called the Center for Integrated Access Networks. This is a National Science Foundation-funded engineering research center at the University of Arizona. Welcome, Nasser.
Thank you, Cord. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Appreciate you being on. We're going to talk about a major breakthrough that that Nasser's center made recently in holographic systems, as I said, that puts us a big step closer to being able to transmit three-dimensional hologram videos, right? So those of you who are as old as I am or close to it can remember Princess Leia in Star Wars, and hopefully those of you who are a generation or so younger have seen the movie because it's one of the great movies of all time. But Princess Leia at one point appeared in the room in front of Obi-Wan Kenobi and R2-D2 and was begging Obi-Wan Kenobi to save her, and she was in a holographic form, I guess, on a table, and that was kind of a major advance in special effects at the time, and it was sort of the first time that people thought really a lot about the possibility of holographic videos. And so that was 1977, and then in the 2008 presidential election night coverage, CNN used what appeared to be holographic technology in having Wolf Blitzer talk with another correspondent, but it really wasn't holographic technology. They kind of added that other image into the camera feed, so they were sort of faking holograms. But now we've arrived at 2011, and we're going to talk today about a breakthrough that this research center in Arizona made that is really taking us a major step toward having those things be real. First, Nasser, what is CIAN, the Center for Integrated Access Networks? What does it do? What are integrated access networks, just in general?
Anytime that you want to make a phone call, or you're working on your on the Facebook, or you're sending an email, you're using the internet. And the current internet consists of the core of the networks where the fiber optics reside. Various cities are connected together. Then it goes to what's called the metro network, where a city like San Francisco, about 30, 40 miles are connected. And then it goes to the access, where it's closest to the user, to the end user. So basically the users like you and I, using the internet, we are in the access part of the network.
Okay.
So the way this network has been designed, the way it works out right now, most of the work that is done at the access part, when you want to receive or send messages, it's all done electronically. And most of the work that is done in the core of the network, in the fiber optics area, is done by optics.
Okay.
So optics is much faster. It can send trillions of information per second, and it can do a marvelous job. And so there's high capacity, high bandwidth at the core of the network. But by the time it gets to the user, you and I having to access the internet at our desk or in our office, we are down to a few megabits per second. So about the factor of a million times slower. And that's one of the last bottlenecks of the internet. So our center is focused on getting this bottleneck removed, or working toward removing that bottleneck, so that we at our desk could have access to a much higher bandwidth. We are hungry for more and more bandwidth. You like to download those videos instead of or those movies instead of a couple of minutes in a second or less than a second.
Wow.
And that requires much higher bandwidth. There are many applications that may come up that would require higher bandwidth, but the cost of getting high bandwidth is so much. So what we pay per month, 20, 30 bucks a month for our internet use, basically allows us to get something like 2, 3 to 5 megabits per second. And so what we're trying to do, the focus of CIAN is to allow high bandwidth to the end user at low cost. And so basically we are trying to create and develop technologies, optical technologies that allow us doing that.
Okay, I've got you. So you're trying to open up the bottleneck at the end of the pipeline to all the users and allow the full speed of the internet to come through all the way to the desktop. So then let's turn to the 3D live holographic videos. So we have holographic 3D still images. I think everybody's seen those on, you know, sort of cards or in different kinds of displays, a 3D still image, right? A picture that looks 3D, kind of three-dimensional. But that's been around a long time. But why is video so much harder to do?
Yeah, well, 3D display has been around since 1960s. Dennis Gaber got the Nobel Prize in 1971 for inventing holography. Holography is one of the best techniques for seeing 3D, so that's more like the way humans look at their surroundings. And so since 1964, which was shown by Emmett Leith that this can be done, this holography and holograms have been around, and you can see it on your credit card and so on. Mm. But those are fixed holograms. Those are like pictures that you put on your wall, and you can sort of make that similar to the comparison is between a picture and a TV in your room. The picture is there, it's just fixed, it doesn't change.
Right.
But your TV, you're getting information at the video rate is pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
To make it, so trying to make a video of a hologram so that you can look at it just like you basically see your surrounding is the difficult part. And most of that difficulty comes from the ability to make materials, like, for example, on your TV, the screen is a lot of times, for example, is liquid crystal display. So having a material that allows writing the information very fast and seeing that information and displayed very quickly, that has been a bottleneck. That has been a problem that people have been looking at. And there are several ways of doing it. The way we are approaching it is by using light to write the information holographically. And that's a technique that requires and generates less information that could be transported, while there are other techniques like computer-generated holograms that could be done, which requires a lot more information processing and bit processing to do it. So to answer your question a bit different way, you can have pictures on your wall, but you can't always make TV that rapidly. So that's sort of the comparison.
Okay, so it's a whole different dimension of manipulation of electronic images to make it move than it is to have it just be still and fixed. So, well, what was the kind of, you know, as I said, you apparently have made a really big kind of world-class breakthrough in our ability to move toward having commercially available 3D videos. What was the key research advance that that kind of unlocked the door for you there?
Yes, I have started to work on this special plastic, which we call it photorefractive polymers, in about 1989, 1990, so about 20, 21 years ago.
Wow.
And we've been keeping improving it, and the first breakthrough came in our Nature article in 2008. We were able to show the first advances in holography and use of holographic display for updatable display. That means we were able to create images and in 3D and erase them. And these images, to look at them, you then require to have to wear any eyewear. For example, if you go to movie Avatar or any other 3D movie, they ask you to wear those special glasses,
right,
to allow you to see things in 3D. In our technology, it doesn't require that. So it required that piece, that medium that would allow writing the information, erasing it, and rewriting on it, and a medium that has basically memory that could do that. So this process, as I said, took a long time to actually create, but then in 2008, we were able to write one image in about 4 or 5 minutes and display it and erase it in about 1 minute. So it took us 5-6 minutes to write an image and erase it and put the new image. And what we did in the last couple of years, and the paper that was published in the cover of Nature in 2010, was the fact that we were able to reduce that time to 2 seconds. So from several minutes to 2 seconds. So now we can actually write images very rapidly and show them very rapidly. And that basically brought us to the topic of telepresence, because as soon as you have the 3D information that you can display, now you can think of sending that information from one location to another location. Just the way you mentioned about the Princess Leia appearing in Star Wars as a science fiction event, what we showed was similar to that in a sense that we were able to have the information in one room and send that information in 3D, basically send that information from one location, from one room to another room, and show it in 3D in the other room at a very rapid rate. It was every image was coming in at every in every 2 seconds, so it wasn't video rate, but it was like a slow movie. So that's where we are right now.
Well, it kind of reminds me of, in a way, of the early days of television, but even more so of the very first telephone transmission, when Alexander Graham Bell called to his assistant Watson in the other room and said, "Watson, come here," or whatever. I guess that, you know, movies are really just the rapid replacement of images. And so you're saying you've got it down to where you can replace an image. You can read and erase and read and erase every 2 seconds. So it's a very early movie technology.
Exactly that that concept of Graham Bell and calling from one room to the other room. That's the same thing we thought as well, exactly.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Dr. Nasser Peygambarian, who is the director of the Center for Integrated Access Networks, or CIAN, that's located at the University of Arizona. It's an engineering research center, one of a network of ERCs. And we're talking with him about a breakthrough that his center recently made in the area of holographic 3D videos. And so they're moving from having holographic still images like you see on a credit card when you move it around and it changes, to doing that in a 3D way in a video. And so they've just kind of taken the first steps toward it, but they've made a breakthrough in the kind of special advanced materials that allow that process to occur. So I'm assuming that since this is a big world and there are lots of universities and university and industry research groups alike, that some other groups somewhere in the world have been pursuing the same goal, Nasser, have they?
Yes, there has been a lot of work in this area, not specifically on what we are doing, but other technologies that would get you there. For example, computer-generated holography is one of those techniques that instead of writing images optically, you can pretty much create those images electronically and then send it around. That technology is going well, and is one of the techniques that may someday work very well. And there are other ways that people are looking at, for example, for 3D TV companies like Samsung and Philips have been working on trying to create the technology that would not require eyeglasses, and basically would put some sort of a lensed array in front of the display so that it would make it look like a 3D TV. So those are going well, and in fact, Samsung just last month in Wall Street Journal announced that the technology that would not require eyeglasses would probably be available in about 10 years from the way that they are doing it. However, the way we look at things is that holography, I think, is one of the best technologies to show 3D images, and is the holy grail of the display, actually, holographic display. And the reason that it is, the reason I think that way, is because it is closest to the way we are looking at things. For example, when you go to the movie Avatar or any other 3D movie, what you see there are pretty much only two perspectives for an image. One for one eye and one for the other eye.
Right.
So the number of perspectives is very limited. In our technology, we can put 100 perspectives in one image. So in other words, it's like if you look at the object and you look around it. So, if, for example, in the movie Avatar, people are sitting in fixed places on their chairs and they're looking at the 3D cinema, and that's great. But let's say if you want to go and look at the other side of that image, if they're showing you a building, and you're looking at the front of the building. If you want to go and see the back of the building, that's not possible for you.
Yeah.
With our technology, you can actually, just like the imagine the Princess Leia, people sitting around the table can look at a different part, different perspectives of the image. The same thing we can actually generate. So instead of a smaller number of views, we can put as many as 100, 150 images or views, 150 perspectives on the same image. So it makes it much more real. And so, and the way we are doing it optically is also a natural way of doing it, I believe, because we create those images. Those fringes that we create are naturally created by light rather than being calculated or being electronically produced. So I think this is the technology that, assuming successful, I would say that it has a very high potential of being used.
So I think what I got from that is out of the various competing approaches and technologies toward 3D holographic images, you think yours is the best?
They are not really, some of them are not really, some of them are holographic, some of them are not holographic.
Yeah, I got you. Okay.
So as you said, for example, the way that was done with the 2008 election, that was an holographic.
Was not,
if you look at Cisco and their product, that they're trying to sell telepresence product, that's not holographic. So there are technologies that are holographic, and even among those holographic technologies, there are ones that some that are optically activated. There are some that are electronically activated. So there are many technologies that exist, and at the end of the day, what wins, I think, is the quality of the image and the cost.
Yeah, that's usually what happens. So where do you stand now? I mean, I know that you've just kind of made the first step past the barrier, so to speak, toward being in the world of holographic 3D video projection. But what kind of images are you able to produce now, and how big, and what's the color of the displays, and you know, what type of image? I mean, is it a 3D thing that's you know, an avatar that's standing up in a room that you can walk around, or is it on a screen? I mean, just kind of describe for our listeners, you know, in pretty simple terms, what they would be looking at if they looked at your current images.
Yeah, our current images is basically we can show them on a screen just like a TV, or we can put it on the top of a table and go around it and look at it at 360-degree view.
Hmm.
So you can look at the object, the front of the object, the back of the object, the side, anywhere, just by walking around it. And so it's actually collaborative, so people could sit around the table and discuss using the image that is in there. At present time, the largest size that we have is about the 17-inch. So, like, imagine a 17-inch TV.
Mm.
That's the size that we can make. The speed of it for smaller images is about 2 seconds. Every 2 seconds, there is an image that's coming in.
Mm.
We have shown two colors for sure, two colors and combination of some colors, and we are going toward full color. So there's a lot to be improved, but that's sort of where the technology sits.
Okay. So, you know, it is pretty primitive now, but you can see how to improve it pretty rapidly to be more colors, bigger images, faster turnover of the images, so it gets more and more realistic, I guess, is the general goal, to become more and more realistic, huh? And then how are these images delivered to the viewer? Is it a projector that projects it into the room, or is it, you mentioned a TV, is it a special kind of holographic TV that's mounted on a wall? Or, you know, once it gets to be a commercial product, what will it look like? What form will it take?
Well, it could have several forms. It could be like a special TV, so you can think of it as a screen that projects images in 3D to the surrounding, or it could be a top of a table display, so that the images are coming away from the table into a free space. So it's like, think of an apple tree on the top of a table, and you're trying to go and touch those apples, and there's nothing but air that you can touch.
Mm.
But actually, the apple trees apples are there, and the apple tree is there.
Mm.
So basically, the image comes off of the plane, so it could be either of those two forms. And that's how the viewer would be looking at it. And the way the image are delivered, I think, is going to be through the internet, as I was describing at the very beginning, through explaining the Cyan. One of the major applications that we are thinking about in sort of a transform network that we are working on is telepresence, which could be used for, showing an object of distance at the video rate, or it could be telemedicine, or it could be many other applications. But the way it's delivered, I think, is going to be through the internet, and the back of basically the display either is on the top of a table or on the wall. The back of it is sits our laser that takes that information that's coming in, writes the image so that the viewers can see it at a very fast rate.
Okay. So actually, it sounds like you can just kind of wave your hand through this image if it is up on top of a table, for example, and the image is still there, but maybe your hand is colored as it goes through it, but it doesn't. It does disrupt the display just as long as you're moving your hand through it, but that's going to be interesting. Does the image have to be something that's transmitted live, or can it be pre-recorded like a movie? I mean, I think the idea of what you're doing now is something that's live, but can it be a recorded thing so that ultimately you can watch 3D movies that were made 5 years ago?
Oh, yeah, that's not a problem. I think it's as long as you can make it live, you can make a movie out of it, and you can do various things. Those, I think, are going to be not too much of a difficulty to make. And as you said, yeah, you can wave your hand through the image, through the air that is surrounding that that display, and you don't interrupt, so you can actually view the image as you wish.
What other barriers are there to getting to that kind of holy grail, as you said, of a holographic TV display? What other kinds of improvements, just quickly, are needed?
Yes, there are a number of things that we need to do. We need to increase the size. We need to make it full color. We need to increase the speed of the display. And also, we need to make it more efficient in terms of use of energy, and we have to make it low cost. So all of those are pretty much things that have to be done in order to make this viable commercially. At present time, of course, it is a scientific exercise, and it would take some time to go through all of these improvements, but the first evidence, the first results are very encouraging.
Well, given the fact that the last mile, or whatever they used to call it anyway, I don't know if it's the last 100 yards now or what, but to the actual end user residentially is still going to stay there for a long time. I mean, that's a fixed infrastructure that has to be replaced before you can punch through the bottleneck that exists there. I'm guessing that a lot of the applications are going to be more like scientific and industrial and governmental and so on. But how long do you think it will be, even leaving aside the idea of the commercial market, people like you and me using it at home, how long will it be until it's usable by, let's say, government and industry or hospitals or whatever, to have this available where it's really usable?
Yes, you see, if you would have followed the World Cup development, Japan was one of the contenders. And if you would have looked at their website, one of the things that they were promising to do if the World Cup would go to Japan in 2022 was to provide the game in 3D holographically.
Wow.
So for 2022. So their prediction was that by 2022, which is 12 years down the road, consumers would have access to the games and other things in 3D holographically. Now, who's going to win and how it's going to be done, that's another question. But I think something like 10 years or 12 years is actually not too bad of a of an assumption that it will take to get there.
Well, that's not too long to wait.
Not too long. I mean, we are talking about wide access to the technology, but I would suspect that before that, for special uses of the technology, it would be faster. And that would be special uses maybe in the hospitals, MRI information, for example. If you want to get an MRI or CAT scan, that information is already available in 3D, because when you go and get an MRI, they take slices through the area of interest You have images of that, and the way they are looking at that image right now, most of the time they just pin to the views of that, and they put it on the table, and the doctor would take a look at it and would do whatever it needed to do. But adding a piece, for example, to that expensive piece of equipment that would allow the doctors to have that information in 3D in real time, that may not be too far down the road, because they can afford the expense that comes with it.
What about actually conducting surgery remotely, telesurgery? Is that going to be something that's an application for this?
That would be a very good application of this, and that's one of the things that we are trying to demonstrate in Cyan, where you have a number of sites around the world are looking and participating and collaborating in a surgery that is done remotely. So assuming that they have the 3D technology in front of them, they would be able to participate much more efficiently.
I suppose eventually you could do business meetings that are now done on the web through the internet, but they're on a screen. You could have a business meeting where people are sitting holographically across the table from you, I suppose. It's not too far-fetched, huh?
No, not at all. I think that's one of the major applications, that there's a lot of interest in it. Yes, if you can actually show people in 3D in real time, there would be a lot of interest in that, because it would save energy, it would just save cost and time and so on, that people would be much more inclined to do it that way, to basically use a telepresence, a 3D telepresence system, than travel from here to Japan, for example, to participate in a meeting. But of course, the quality has to be good enough that this would work all the time. So those are the questions that need to be resolved and answered.
Well, NASA, we just have a minute or so to go, but you mentioned the Japanese government's interest in this. Is the U.S. government, I assume they are also very interested in the potential for holographic video. Are they putting lots of resources into this?
Yes, the U.S. government is starting to look into that and use it for applications that they have in mind. So I would suspect that interest would grow in time as the technology is being demonstrated and is the proof of it working comes out. I would say more and more resources hopefully will go into this area, because, you know, we are in the information age, and showing that information in a way that it would not affect, or it would not make the eye tired or something like that, or eye fatigue, that would be very important. So I'm pretty sure that interest is going to go up.
Well, NASA, as so often happens, I'd like to have more time to talk about this interesting subject with you a little longer, but we are out of time. Our listeners who want to see more about holographic video and Cyan's breakthroughs in it can go to NSF.gov, that's the National Science Foundation, NSF.gov, and just in the search box, search for holographic video. That's the easiest way to find some pretty good multimedia displays about this topic. You can also go to NASA's research center, which is www.cian, which is cian-erc.org. So cian-erc.org. NASA, I want to thank you for being on with us on American Variety.
Thank you, Kurt. It was a pleasure.
Pleasure here as well. Thanks to you all for listening, and I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.